So our first case this morning is Hutchins v. State. Counsel are here. If the clerk will please announce counsel who will argue today.
May I please support the Senator Jordan to argue for the appellant and Mr. Edward Wilkinson to argue for the state.
All right, gentlemen. Mr. Gordon, you ready to proceed?
Yes, ma'am.
Chief Justice, Justices, I have known you so long that I'll just grin. My issues to present are basically two. My first issue is that the law requires a knowing, intelligent, and voluntary waiver of rights before a statement can be admitted into evidence. And my argument, which is set forth in the brief, and I'm going to touch on it just briefly, is that merely initialing a rights card is not a knowing and intelligent waiver of rights. My submission is that there must be more. There must be at least one more question. Do you understand your rights? Are you waiving your rights? And then go forward. And I'm saying that the record shows that appellant Michael Hutchins really had no clue as to what was going on. He was uneducated, he was unlearned, and he had already undergone some 3 or 4 hours of interrogation by Fort Worth police before the Arlington detective took over. And I'm...
Was he under arrest at that time?
Yes.
I thought the Fort Worth and the Arlington interviews were on different days.
Fort Worth arrested him. He was in custody some 3 or 4 hours, and then Arlington comes in, I think it's late or... early the next morning and starts his interrogation. So he had been under interrogation for about 4 hours. He testified that they never read him his rights. There was no controverting evidence from the state that he had been. There was an objection by Mr. Foran that he had, but they never presented a Fort Worth police officer to say, we read him his rights. So I think there was a 3 or 4 hour interrogation without rights advisement. I think that was proved on the record.
And no recording made of that one?
There was a long recording, some 4+ hours on recordings of the interviews. He was suspected of multiple cases, multiple robberies in Fort Worth, and he was suspected, and I don't know whether Fort Worth developed the Arlington lead and called the Arlington detective, but I know that at some point the Arlington detective came in. I think he was briefed. In my brief, there's a comment that based upon that interview, I made my arrest, and he hadn't even really started his interview yet. So I believe the record shows that, in fact, Fort Worth had briefed this Arlington detective, and they had interrogated Mr. Hutchins without reading his rights. He wasn't advised of his rights. Arling detective comes in and within 30 minutes has a full and complete confession, but he did advise Mr. Hutchins of his rights, which leads to my second point, which I think is the most important one, is this continuing interrogation started by no rights advisement, broken by another officer coming in, then reading rights and continuing the interrogation. A very divided Supreme Court said this type of interrogation is not, well, in my words, is not fair. It's designed to confuse a defendant. It's designed to make him think that if you've said anything at all during the non-rights interrogation, that you've got to continue saying that to the new interrogation. That is true. And as the Court of Criminal Appeals in the Miranda decision, which I have cited heavily, they said that really doesn't matter whether they gave a confession or not. It is the interrogation, it is the developing of information, which then leads to the second interrogation, and the confession. That when you...
What in the first interrogation led to a confession in the second interrogation?
Fort Worth developed their cases. They then ultimately filed, I've forgotten, 5 or 6 cases. Fort Worth developed leads against Mr. Hutchins for the Arlington robberies. The robberies in Arlington, there was no identification of a defendant or a perpetrator. The clerk, when he testified, really said, I couldn't identify him. This confession, which was developed through this, I don't know, 4.5-plus-hour interrogation, developed 6 or 7 robberies against Mr. Hutchins, 2 of which were in Arlington, and I think 5 of which were in Fort Worth.
Have you cited anything in the interview with Fort Worth officer that would be characterized as leads that were developed?
The only thing that I cited in my brief and in my argument is when the Arlington detective made the comment that my decision to arrest the defendant was based upon that interrogation. He had...
Which interrogation? I mean...
That's the issue that's unclear. And I'll admit it's unclear.
To the conclusion that it was the first interrogation.
I believe it is reasonable to believe that, in fact, with the information that Fort Worth would have developed over 3 or so hours of questioning, and then I know police officers will talk to each other. They will develop their leads together. Even Arlington will do that. Once Fort Worth had questioned him for some 3 hours or so, again, without advising him of his rights, had they advised him of his rights, the state would have brought one police officer in to say, we advised him of his rights. They didn't do it. And I think that, and I submit that is in fact proof that he was never advised of his rights until the Arlington detective came in 3-plus hours later and took over. He advised Mr. Hutchins of his rights. He had Mr. Hutchins initial the rights card. But he didn't explain that, hey, he said, yes, I'm here to investigate Arlington. But he never said anything to the effect of, what you said before doesn't matter. I'm not going to use that. You're not required to tell me anything that you've told Arlington, told Fort Worth. I just want to talk about this. Curing what had occurred before. And my point is on this issue that interrogation without rights advisement flies in the face of Miranda. It, if allowed to exist and go forward, there will be more of it. That Miranda and 3822 purely say, our job is to uncover crime, our job is to solve crime, and our job is to do it right. And my point is this continuing, unwarned, then warned interrogation was not doing it right. And that there wasn't a real substantial break in the interrogation. He was in custody of Fort Worth. He was not free to go. He was held there. Fort Worth came to the Mansfield facility. I mean, Arlington came to the Mansfield facility. The Arlington detective took over. So we have really an unbroken stream of interrogation. I don't think it was several hours. The defendant testified that he thought that he was there. My reading of the record was he thought he had been there for hours and hours. I think the indication was he had been there from 3.5 to 4, which is still a lengthy period of time.
Well, that was the interview with Fort Worth. I'm talking about the gap between the interview with Fort Worth and the interview with Arlington.
I do not recall any testimony Chip made, but I don't recall any testimony concerning how quickly Arlington took over. I know there were breaks in the interrogations. I know that at some point Mr. Hutchins testified that he was left alone in a room for a little while. I know that he testified that he thought he was allowed to go to the bathroom but not to leave. So I'm just saying that he was in custody. The state did not show in this particular point that his waiver of his rights was intelligently or freely done. He testified that he thought he had to tell Arlington what he'd already told Fort Worth. He said, no, I didn't confess. I don't know for sure what all, I'm not an interrogator. I'm not licensed, I'm not trained as a detective. There are things that we say that we don't even realize what we've said could be an admission or could be damning. But Hutchins thought that he should go forward and tell the Arlington detective what he'd already told Fort Worth. He initialed the rights card and within 30 minutes had confessed to at least two robberies. I think the record shows that he didn't understand what was going on. He didn't appreciate what was going on. He didn't intelligently comprehend what was going on.
Isn't the concern under your proposal, basically then all investigators or police would have to always give the Miranda rights, even if they were just doing what they allegedly say they're doing here with the Fort Worth police, they were interviewing. I mean, he wasn't in custody initially. And, I mean, it's a proper investigative tool to interview prospective witnesses.
He was in custody. I disagree with you, Chief Justice. Okay. Yes. He had been arrested and was actually at the Mansfield facility in an interrogation room for at least 3 hours, if not longer. I think 4 hours is about right. The state wanted to show that he was free to leave, but he wasn't free to leave once you're inside that facility unless they let you out. I've been there. So, in answer to your question, if Fort Worth had advised him of his Miranda rights, if the state had brought one officer in rebuttal to say, I read him his rights, we had him in custody, I read him his rights, I wouldn't be here. Because once you've read Miranda, once you've agreed to talk, the defendant must affirmatively assert those rights again. They must be unequivocal and request either to hush or I want a lawyer or something. But there wasn't any evidence. There wasn't any testimony that Fort Worth did it right. So the Arlington detective read him his rights. And as he said, I don't know what they did with Fort Worth, but I read him his rights, which he did. But this is after this kid had been, and he was only, what, about 20, streetwise, book stupid. He was ready. He had been softened up. The Arlington detective obviously did a good job. He knew what he was doing. And I don't fault him at all. It's just that when he read the rights, when he advised Mr. Hutchins of his rights, the constitutional right had already been violated. Fort Worth had already failed to do what it was supposed to do before questioning him. That carried forward. The state then had an obligation to show that he was warned, hey, whatever you said before doesn't matter. I'm here. Anything you said before is immaterial.
But that's the problem, or where I'm having difficulty with your argument is he didn't say anything before. You're saying that you can't, that they couldn't carry that forward and he needed to be told that what you said to them doesn't matter. If he didn't say anything to them, then how is he harmed?
Well, again, I go back to the State v. Martinez case, which, as you know, was reversed, remanded to the Corpus Christi court, remanded to the trial court, and I don't know what's happened to it since. But the court stated, it is immaterial to our consideration whether incriminating statements emerged from the unwarned interrogation. It's page 623-24. It is the fact of the interrogation without proper constitutional rights advisement that raises the issue. If a constitutional issue or violation is raised, it is incumbent upon the state to then cure it. And
there's plenty of cases that they sat where it was cured.
That's correct.
Saying it wasn't here because they said what you said, they didn't say what you said to Fort Worth, we're not going to use against you, even though you didn't say anything.
There are numerous ways in which this curative action can take place. I've cited from cases certain ones. If the detective refers to the pre-Miranda statements that and says, those don't matter to me. If the detective says, you're unwarned, but everything you said to the Fort Worth is inadmissible against you, that cures it because it tells that defendant, whatever you said earlier, basically, what is said here stays in Las Vegas. What happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. What is said before stays before. Now, that doesn't matter. He did say, and he did testify, I'm from Arlington. I want to know about Arlington cases. Does that tell an unlearned person, everything you've said before doesn't matter? Or, as Mr. Hutchins testified, I thought I was supposed to tell him what I told Fort Worth.
All right, the time is up.
Thank you. I didn't expect to take that long.
May it please the court. As this court is well aware, the standard review in the suppression case is that almost total due deference to the trial court's findings of fact, and you apply the law to the case de novo. In this case, the trial court made the following findings of fact. The defendant was read his Miranda rights during his, at the very beginning of his interview by Detective Wright of the Arlington Police Department. Defendant was specifically warned he had a right to remain silent and any statement he made could be used against him. He was advised that he had a right to an attorney and that an attorney would be appointed if he couldn't afford one. The court found the defendant knowingly, intelligently, and voluntarily waived all his Miranda rights. The trial court made the finding the defendant was not promised anything, the defendant was not threatened. Particularly importantly to the appellant's argument now, the trial court found that the defendant was not in custody when he spoke to the Fort Worth Police Department. And following up on the factual dispute in this, the record reflects that the defendant was interviewed by Fort Worth Police on February? On the 13th, at which month. He was not interviewed by Detective Wright of the Arlington Police Department until 9 p.m. on the 14th. That's in Volume 3, page 56 of the record, in which Detective Wright says he didn't begin the interview until 9 p.m. the following day in a different facility. Appellant was interviewed by the Fort Worth Police Department at the Fort Worth Police Headquarters in downtown Fort Worth. The defendant himself testified to that. He was interviewed in a room used for that purposes in the Fort Worth facilities. He was then transferred to the Mansfield facility where he was incarcerated. On separate charges, an assault charge, as a matter of fact, and it was at the Mansfield facility, depending on when he was transferred over to Mansfield, a significant number of hours later, where he was interviewed by Detective Wright.
How did he end up at the Fort Worth Police Department? You said he wasn't in custody. Why was he there?
Why was he? He was suspected of a number of robberies. Apparently, it's not entirely clear from the record, but apparently the Fort Worth Police had gotten a tip that he had been involved in a number of robberies in Fort Worth and Arlington. And in fact, they passed that tip along to Detective Wright, which has alerted Detective Wright that appellant was now a suspect in the robberies that Wright had been assigned to investigate. So that's where it initially arose. That's why the trial court found that he was not in custody. They brought him in for questioning. If you listen to the recording of the Fort Worth police interview, at the very beginning, the police officer says, I want to make it clear, you're not in custody. It's quoted in the state's brief. You're not in custody. You're free to go. You're free to take any breaks you want. You can go to the bathroom. We'll get you a drink. The standard sorts of things from the get-go. The trial court, based on that, found that he was not in custody. The trial court significantly also found that the defendant did not confess to the Fort Worth police officers. If you listen to the four-hour recording, you'll see he didn't admit to anything. He wasn't given anything away in that particular interview. So to suggest that one led to the other is a stretch the state would maintain.
So do we have anything in the record that tells us the gap in time, if there was, between the Fort Worth interview and then the transfer to Arlington, or was it one continuous?
Nothing specific. There are no times as to when the interview began in the Fort Worth Police Headquarters. All we know is that it was on the day before, on the 13th. They actually use specific dates, but they don't use times. Not until, actually, Detective Wright testified first. Detective Wright testifies that his interview started at 9 p.m. on the 14th. Defendant, and I think there are other evidence in the record that the Fort Worth police officers interviewed them on the 13th. I don't remember now. I've listened to both confessions. I don't remember now where the. I'm sure the police officer did announce what time it was, but I didn't think to jot it down at the time. I could go back and look if the court really wants to know. I'm sorry.
Have you sent both of the recordings up on appeal?
I believe they're in the record. They're up. I pulled our copy, but.
You say in your brief he was later arrested by Fort Worth officers on the unrelated assault charge.
Yes, ma'am.
So when did that arrest happen, if you know?
There's nothing in the record specifically as to it. It is clear from the record, I think, that it occurred after the interview because he wasn't in custody at the time, and the police officer specifically said he wasn't in custody at the time. So presumably he was arrested sometime after that, and it was on an unrelated charge, an assault charge. I beg your pardon?
He was arrested on the 13th.
It's not clear from the record that he was arrested on the 13th or the 14th. Well, presumably it was on the 13th. I'm just guessing, judging from how police officers work, it was probably shortly after the interview. But I don't know that for a fact. That is not in the record anywhere. And there's nothing. The defendant certainly never testified that he was released and was out for a while and then picked up again. But presumably that could happen. I've dealt with cases where that has. The record is totally silent as to that issue.
So basically the state's position is there was no really. There wasn't even a taint during the first interview that could even carry over to the second interview.
Yes, Your Honor, that's basically the three prongs of the question first, Mirandize later, is that first he had a right to be Mirandized, and the state deliberately did an end around that right by conspiring to interview him first and then read him Miranda rights, that the first interview actually elicited a confession, and then that they used that confession to get another proper Mirandized confession in a subsequent interview. In other words, hey, you got nothing to lose now. You've already confessed once. Let's confess again when everything's done correctly. In this particular case, they lose on all three of those. In the first interview, he had no right to be Mirandized. If he had no right to be Mirandized, then it couldn't have been a deliberate end around his right to be Mirandized, because there was no right to be Mirandized. Second, there was no evidence whatsoever there was any deliberate effort on the part of Detective Wright or the Fort Worth Police Department to somehow subjugate his Miranda rights in the first interview. And third, because he never confessed anything in the first interview, it couldn't have been a question first, Mirandize later, because the initial interview didn't lead to a confession that was then used in the second interview to again elicit a confession. So, and the state cites the cases, the Dixon case is the key case on the nexus between the first confession and second confession. That's a recent U.S. Supreme Court case. This court's opinion in McCulley is for the proposition that there has to be evidence that it was a deliberate two-step process. There's no evidence here of that. And, of course, the state cites the Irvins, the Waring, Hartley, and Beltran all for the proposition that if he didn't have a Miranda right in the first interview, then it doesn't implicate this, question first, Mirandize later proposition. As to his first two points of error, the court's findings of fact are supported by the record. If you apply de novo the applicable law, the trial court found that it was intelligent, knowing, and voluntary waivers, and that is supported by the record and the facts as a whole. As to his specific complaints, he wasn't coerced, intimidated, threatened, or denied any necessities. He never made that claim. The officers weren't required to make them aware of what the subject matter of it was. In other words, Detective Wright did not have to go in and say, hey, the Fort Worth officers talked about Fort Worth cases. I want to talk about the Arlington cases. The cases are pretty clear, both Supreme Court and Court of Criminal Appeals cases, that that's not required. You don't have to tell a defendant what you intend to interrogate him about in order to make his waiver of the Fifth Amendment rights, in order to render it voluntary. Moreover, Wright did make it clear. I mean, he testified, and if you listen to the recordings, he was right up front. I'm an Arlington officer. I'm here to investigate Arlington cases. They did discuss some of the Fort Worth cases initially, but that was just to sort of say, hey, you wore these clothes in this robbery, and look, here are these photographs of the Arlington robberies. Those look kind of similar. What do you think? And that's how he elicits the confession. And finally, there was no express waiver. It's necessary to look at the totality of the circumstances. The Burgess case, the Joseph case, cited by the state in its brief, all hold that you just look at the totality of the circumstances. Here, the totality of the circumstances are that he waived his Fifth Amendment rights. He actually admitted it. He said, when I signed the card, I knew I understood my rights. I understood I was waiving them. He testified to that at the suppression hearing. If the court has any questions, just stay praised for an affirmance.
Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson. Mr. Gordon, rebuttal.
The only rebuttal, Judge, is that the court has said a previous confession is irrelevant. It depends upon what has been done. Has there been a constitutional violation? Has there been interrogation? Was he under arrest? Was he free to leave? I think the record shows that he was under arrest. He wasn't free to leave. They interrogated him over a period, I don't know, 2 days, I think Chip's right. But exactly when, Chip's right. The record is silent. But it was a continuing thing. He never was put in a cell. He never went to bed. He never did anything. I think the record shows that. And I believe that the case should be reversed and remanded to the trial court for a determination of whether there was a constitutional violation of the defendant's rights in this continuing interrogation. And that's it. Thank you. If you have any questions, otherwise I'm done.
Thank you, Mr. Gordon. Thank you, Mr. Wilkinson. We appreciate your arguments today and your briefing. Your case is now submitted, and you all are excused. We're going to take a 10-minute recess to get set up for our next case, Ace Fire versus Simpkins.
All rise.